You're listening to Trot the Egging, hosted by John Hetherington, working with Widnes Rugby Union Football Club, sponsored by Boydells.
This week's rugby story is that of a Warrington lad who found rugby at Wolston Rovers. Rugby wasn't a straightforward journey for him, but he's someone who takes things as they come. He had spells with Warrington Wolves, Leigh Centurions, Wakefield Trinity, Swinton Lions, Northern Pride in Australia, Hull KR, St George Illawarra, Illawarra Cutters, Salford and represented Ireland. He was the ultimate team man and went about his business professionally. Ladies and gents, Mr. Tyrone McCarthy. Follow Trot the Egging on social media outlets. Facebook is Trot the Egging. YouTube is Trot the Egging. Twitter is @TrotTheEgging/@JohnHeth. Instagram is @Trot_D_Egging. And LinkedIn, John Hetherington.
Right, so how are you in the family, Ty?
Yeah, good. Yeah, busy. New job and two little ones keeping us entertained, to say the least.
And young.
Yeah. Like we've aged about 20 years in the last three.
Nah, mate, no. So before we get stuck into your rugby story, mate, where was home for you and who lived with you as a kid?
Yeah, I grew up in Warrington. With my brother. I only had one sibling, mum, dad. And then pretty much just went to school in Padgate and then played for Wolston Rovers.
Right, mate. So how did Wolston come about for you when we introduced you to rugby?
Probably following my brother's footsteps, really. You know, obviously he's about 5.5 years older than me. So when I was that, you look up to your big brother. I was about maybe 9 or 10, got not fast, but went down to a session. didn't really want to do it. So didn't get involved. And then probably about a year down the line, just asked mum one day, could go down. And then the night I went down was with the wrong age group, but I ended up staying, playing an age above for a couple of years, 2 or 3 years.
All right. So did you managed to miss the town team stuff then with you playing a year above?
No, actually, so that would have been, I must have been like year six when I started and managed to make the under-11s town team. And I think I was captain of that. So I think playing a year above helped me because I was like straight away playing with more physical lads.
Yeah.
12 months is a long time for kids and obviously, I can vouch for that now. We're working with the academy and the scholarship boys that how much development could take place in a couple of months in a kid.
Right. So, do you remember the process of that tie or?
Yeah, I think with the town team, we used to go for trials and then, your school would send you go down for a trial. And obviously, I think you'd have a few reports from your school and then just the best kids got selected up from that day, really, I think.
Yeah, right. So with you playing rugby and that, mate, how was transitioning to high school for you and was school something you enjoyed?
I had a difficult time at school, actually. Something that I've not really spoke about. But yeah, looking back, I was quite like talented at rugby from that age and people kind of knew me when I was in school and got targeted a bit. So I ended up moving schools, getting... At first, I didn't mind the confrontation and stuff. I quite enjoyed it. And then over time, it just got a bit draining and decided that I wanted to move schools. And mum said, well, if you really want to, it's up to you to kind of organise it. And yes, I did. So it was about year eight, after year eight, finished year at one Battle of Hitlers and then moved over to Padgate and where a lot of my rugby mates were. But I wouldn't say I didn't enjoy it. I just think, looking back, there was definitely challenges there that probably not really kind of acknowledged how it helped develop me and build a bit of resilience from a young age.
Right. So it basically took you to move school for you to really kick on in school then, yeah?
Yeah, I think I was always kind of bright. Probably in primary school, I was a bit cheeky and that's so kind of at the start of that... Of my journey at high school, I was kind of putting all the lower sets, but I was I found it like really easy. And then I think when once I moved out, people didn't really I thought it was better than them, and because of move sets and stuff. But and that was part of the reason why I kind of had that confrontation at a young age. But when I went to the second high school, I just feel like I was more comfortable. I probably always with school kind of just did enough to get through, and like I say, I think primarily enjoyed playing PE, my PE lessons and the extracurricular stuff more than probably the actual classes.
Fair enough, mate. So at your high school, did you have to play rugby union to play rugby league, or did they not put that on you?
No, we didn't really have rugby, so we had a football team, and then we ended up by just chance. Say a lot of us played rugby at the local club at Woolston. So I think in my age group at the school there was about 8 or 9. So then it wasn't until year 11. We had a teacher who was really into his rugby union, a Welsh teacher, Mr. Norman. Still keep in touch with, but he said, "Oh well, if you want to put a team together, we'll play." So we had a couple of games in year 11. At school rugby there didn't really exist.
Right, because 9 years is enough to sort of get by in it, you can carry a few footy lads with 9 years, can't you?
Yeah, well, it was funny, we were talking today about it, so we set up the school team, and then off the back of it, we needed some wingers, and that, one of the ones that come and played was Kev Penny, and that was his first game of rugby, and then, I'm not lying, literally off the back of that, he got signed off that one game.
So was that an assist, mate?
Yeah, so then and I was sat there going, "Have I not got a contract? Just set him up for four tries."
It's a bargaining tool, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if we just go back a little bit, then did you play a service early in that tie? So looking at playing rugby at school?
I think we'd so we had schoolboys at under 13s, and then I think it changed the service area within that, whether it was the under 15s or 14s. Because schoolboys was every 2 years, and then service area got changed. And I think I probably at that point I was doing well, and then in that area that probably didn't grow. So then kind of got a little bit, I was still involved, but then I'd gone from being like leader, like first pick to kind of middle pick, and kind of fell down a little bit the pecking order within like that kind of system.
Yeah.
So kind of did the service area and started, I think, under 15s, and it was under 16s kind of academy.
The scholarship stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you feel then when kids are going through them growing spurts and you feel like you've just said, you're slipping down the pecking order a little bit, which you're probably not, but as a kid you feel like you are.
Yeah.
How did you take that?
I just think, I don't want to say it deterred me, I just kind of thought, just keep doing what I'm doing. I enjoyed playing rugby, like, first and foremost. And then, kind of a bit of frustration when play, like people would get picked ahead of you or something, and playing out of position when you want to be playing a certain position. But probably, it probably helps you become a better player without you knowing it. And then I think, going forward, with that academy stuff and the scholarship stuff, I wasn't one of the first like 8 players to get offered, and then but just kind of kept my head down and just kind of thought, well, I'm good enough, I'll end up getting there in the end.
Yeah, so you just trust the process, mate, I suppose. So
yeah.
Obviously we'll touch on your role now later on, but do you think them experiences that early out, you're in the role you're in now because of the young lads you're
helping that. Definitely, I think with obviously the club and coming through the club myself, you can see sort of similarities that kind of still exist, which is good because you've got an actual personal point of view that how you felt and what you thought was good. Sometimes that can be negative and sometimes it can be positive, but I think it's not only myself at the club, there's Lee Mitchell, who's more to do with the foundation, but he's obviously come through exactly the same kind of process. So just kind of that influence and experience, should I say. Yeah, I think it probably is good for the role.
Yeah. So was there any rep opportunities through high school, mate?
No, I went on the like the national camps and stuff like that, but never really, like, I was never kicked onto like Lancashire team until I went to not a high school. I think I was kind of mid-town team, but anything higher than that, not really, no.
Right, mate. So when did club start to circle you then and take notice of you?
So I think I played in them under 16 academy games. And
yeah.
I didn't play in my preferred position for a couple of them. I played centre.
Right.
When I was.
How did you find that then?
Well, I didn't mind. Like, I just tried making, I guess, I made the best of it. I had Kev Penny as a winger, and we just used to kind of celebrate the little wins. Like, we were like, oh, we've scored 10 tries between us. And then the last game I got played, I think it was against Widnes, played 13. Played pretty well. Then they offered me a contract, and I look back and think I've always been a bit stubborn, because then I was like, you know what, like, I'll go back and play at Wollstone. So I played a bit of 18s, and I don't know if it was a bit of open age. Only like a month, and then after that, I was like, nah, I want to
I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a good experience just going and kind of see, and I think there was, well, Warrington were definitely around, and then I think there was a little bit of a sniff at Salford, but then didn't really sit at a table with anyone other than Warrington.
Funny how it comes round, mate, innit?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are them talks about at that age? How does that work, mate?
I think it works differently for every individual's differently. So I think my first thing is that they probably just wanted to keep me on, but then then they offered me a contract, because I think they call it terms and conditions now. But back then, everyone, if you were in, you were in. So, it was pretty much, this is what you can offer, do you want it? And there was no negotiating.
Yeah. It was like, you'll take the million quid.
Yeah. I remember one day, I don't know if he reminds us to talk about, like I said, Kevin, and we worked out how much he was on per day, and we're like, oh yeah, they've got good value out here. But no, it's good learning experience. Looking back at it and thinking, we were picking up a couple hundred quid a month playing rugby whilst we were at college. It wasn't a bad little game.
So how were your academy days, mate, and what standout moments do you remember from them days?
Yeah, I'd say that was a pretty similar journey. I was lost to the folds, and then kind of pecking order again. Had to kind of prove myself. Managed to do that like 18s. I remember my first game was Castleway. Castleford were my enemy, and like got a good report off that game. And then from that point, didn't really ever fall out of the team. Yeah. But then when lads were kicking on playing, I think under 21s at the time it was. I didn't do that until like the last weeks of my top age year as an academy player. So again, I'm like looking, going, oh. So at 18, I was a bit, do I continue with this, do I not? And funnily enough, the person that kind of convinced me to stay on for the pre-season was Gaz Chambers, who's come back in as head of youth now. And he just said, oh, I like what you're about. Let's see. Are you going pre-season? Just do the pre-season with me. I was at university at the time, and I was like, okay. And then he gave me a start in the first reserves game, and the first few games impressed. And then Paul Cullen was the coach in Eastack, going, oh, you know, you're really impressing us. And close to like inviting you down to first team. So then I'd gone from like not being really wanted in the women's space of 6 months, kind of turning it around to be on the cusp of getting invited to train at full time. So, it was kind of a journey, an up and down journey, like with contracts and stuff and waiting. But I guess it just helped build that character. And I definitely was at I could have took it or leave it at that point if Gaz hadn't reached out, to be fair.
Yeah. Well, so you'd have been happy to go back to Wollstone and play at Wollstone?
Yeah, because with the university, I knew the student rugby game was pretty strong. And to be fair, I ended up doing a couple of years playing student rugby anyway, alongside in the academy. And I had some amazing experiences of trips out to Australia and off the back of that. And so in my head, I had a scholarship at the at university too, so they would technically pay me more than what Warrington were, you know, to go to university. And then play rugby on the side and play for Great Britain and Ireland.
So you touched on that tour then, mate, so Student Rugby League, which is key. Yeah. Like a mate of mine, Chris Atkin at Salford, he's gone through that pathway. So it's obviously something that works, isn't it? So for the tour, did you have to fundraise or out like that? And how did the tour come about?
Yeah, we had to. So I represented Ireland in the World Cup.
Yeah.
And I think it was about $2,500 just to raise. I think with my scholarship, it kind of, they donated maybe £500 towards that. And then with like my family and connection and to the Irish club in Warrington, then pretty much raised that in one sitting on one night. Well, I think I got all my sponsors in and I was there or thereabouts. And then, after a few drinks, people were throwing money everywhere and I was like, geez. So I paid for my expenses while I was out there too.
So how was it being in, how are you in a new dressing room, mate? Are you someone that can just slot in or do you have to work at it?
Yeah, no, I've always kind of been comfortable putting myself in difficult or new situations. And I think probably reflecting when once I've retired, you reflect, well, I've reflected like no end. And the school thing, I think that probably helped me with that, kind of going at such a young age, changing and going, oh, I need to meet. Obviously, I did have friends there, but get to know new people. So I've never really been intimidated about going into a new environment or meeting new people. And I think when I left Warrington, obviously I went from Warrington to the other side of the world. And
that's it.
I think there was no bigger challenge looking back at the time, but I was never fearful of it. I kind of always embraced it, really. Yeah.
Right. So what can you talk about from that tour, mate?
Yeah, we had a good time. I remember they used to end a game. It was such a good trip. Like, never gave me the power raids in the big like buckets, and then I think the guy who was Gordon Matthews' team manager, big bloke, and he'd come in and give us a bottle of port, and we took that straight in, and then that was like our recovery drink. And then I think we went to Gold Coast for a trip, and we ended up there for 3 days. but no, we had some like we. So it's interesting, really, because during that period, Rugby League Ireland took over the students. It was actually two lads based in Widnes that had who ran rugby student Ireland students.
Yeah.
And then that Rugby League Ireland got involved, and unfortunately, them two didn't have a job no more. But then tried to make it a bit more professional and governing body led, and so we had a decent coach, an Australian heritage Irish guy, Ben Young, who's really good. And I remember one of the first days, he's like, if you don't make any of our sessions, you're not coming. And I was like, well, I've got games for the Warrington Academy, and I was probably the only academy player playing for Ireland at the time, whereas at the England student team had a fair amount of academy lads in. But no, it was a real good experience. It was some decent rugby. Like, we only won one game in the end in that, but it was against Scotland in the last game. So we celebrated with the 7th best team in the world.
Yeah. With a bit of part.
Yeah, with a bit of part. Yeah. But no, it was, like I say, there were just people that I met through that, and some of the like closest friends, like as you touched on through the with Chris. I know he's been through it, and just the people you meet and the experiences you have from it, it's just helped you grow and develop.
And again, something we'll touch on in a bit, but did that whet your appetite for that side of the world then, mate, a little bit?
A little bit. I think, again, brother had been, he'd gone through with Great Britain students, gone on a tour, stayed out there, always wanted to go back. And then, so he always had it in my head. And I think at 18, when I was at the end of the under-18s academy, then it was either I'll go to university or I'll go travelling. So it was always there. And then like the university allowed me to get out there and have a look at it. And And then, like as I said, the coach was an Australian based guy, and he started going, oh, would you come out here? Would you come out here? And then I think because of we have this inferiority complex of how good the Australians are, and I was like, oh, yeah. No, probably not. Like I remember going through the websites of like some of the like Q Cup teams. I'm like, oh well, would they look at my weight and size? And,
yeah.
But then, as you said, they end up going out there and doing it anyway.
Yeah. No, and how were Warrington during all this, mate? Were they supportive with it? Or?
Yeah, I think Warrington at the time, because they weren't paying as much salary wise. So yeah. As I said, like my scholarship kind of overshadowed that. I think towards the back end, I think I'd done the ACL too during that time. I literally played for Great Britain against Australia. So they weren't too happy about that.
Yeah.
And then in that 9 months, John Bastian come in as head of youth from Leeds, who had had this big reputation, and Richard Marshall who was now back at the club. He was the head coach, and I had a bit of a reputation, but I made a little bit of a reputation before it got to that point, but before I returned. So they were kind of a bit of pressure there to perform, but yeah. I was way behind on my rehab. So it took me about 9 or 10 months to get back. And then after about a year, John actually said, you have to choose one or the other. And I said, well, if you can compensate what I'm going to miss out on through my scholarship, then yeah, I'll stop playing the student kind of side of things.
Right.
But no, other than that, they were really good. I think I shown what the good side and the bad side could be of playing it. Yeah. Like your good side, you get to develop, but then the other side is that you get injured.
Yeah, potentially. And plus, you're putting Warrington out there when maybe without being rude, it wasn't as big as they are now, was it?
Yeah, definitely.
So, like, you were putting them out there for people. But so how had you been with injuries before that? Because that's a big injury, that, isn't it?
Yeah, never. The only one I can remember is I broke my wrist when I was about 11. But other than that, we see some of the young lads get physio and stuff. Like, I don't think I ever had a physio massage until I was like 20.
Yeah.
Until I done my ACL, and I'm like, oh, I need someone to look out and get me through this. But no, I was pretty fortunate. And to be fair, other than maintenance of my knee, generally pretty good in terms of injuries, like big injuries. I've had a couple of shoulder recons end of the season, which seemed to be quite a staple for a rugby league player. But in terms of missing out on games and stuff, not been too bad.
Yeah, you've been pretty solid, mate, haven't you? So
yeah.
What are you like for keeping like memorabilia in that? I'm quite sentimental. So some of that stuff you've done, I'll definitely be keeping like my first top or something. Are you into that?
Yeah, I've always like kind of either put them in places where I know that they'll be safe and give them people, like one of them, unfortunately, a guy who sponsored me to go to the Australia trip, we got close with after, and I donated a shirt to him, and he got cancer, died 2-3 years ago. And
thinking about that, mate.
No, yeah, the whole experience with him and his wife, and really close with his wife, Tessa now, and his name was Matt Roddy. I give him a shirt when I got back from that trip as a thank you, and Tessa's actually given me that back, which is sort of, like you say, you knew it, and I always knew they were going to good places, and they've got one of my debut shirts for Warrington. My granddad's got my Ireland shirt, but my student stuff I have kept. So now I've got, they used to do like a World 13 too. You know, like for the best play. I've got one of them.
Oh, that's class, that, isn't it?
Yeah, I've got a Northwest. I know I've kept a Northwest shirt when we won like the regional competition. Be interesting. I've kept quite a lot. For each club, I've tried to keep one piece of item, because you do end up with, when you've had more clubs like me, you end up with a lot of
lots of stash.
Yeah.
So how did coming into the first team happen for you, and how was it for you being a local lad?
Yeah, it was probably a gradual process. So I think it was in the summer holidays after I'd go in when I'm not at university and do a few sessions. pretty much bag holding at the time, like not doing anything like particularly for, like get to become a first teamer. And that was really cool. And then over that period, James Lowe's become head coach. And then I think, where was we at? So I was playing, I got back fit, I was playing well, and then there was a bit of an opportunity to go get a game by the end of the season, but it never come around. And I played a few first team games, you know, at Chris, like the Christmas Boxing Day game.
Yeah.
And then, but the first team started the season terribly, and like I think we lost the first five or six. And I remember being in a thing, he's like, with a squad build at the time, a bit of a Q&A. So he'd probably have played by now if we'd won a few games. And I was like, all right, cheers, lads. But and then Tony come in, and then unfortunately I had a little bit of an issue with my knee, so I had to have a little clean out. And then I'd graduated from university, had this knee clear out, and then after like 2 weeks, back running, and then Tony was like, are you fit? And I was like, well, yeah. And he was like, well, are you playing Friday night? I was like, all right. So it was quite quick, really. I graduated, back trained, and had this operation, and I was making my debut before I kind of knew it.
Right. And how was that? And what sort of player are you before a game? Are you pretty relaxed or you're a bit nervy?
Yeah, I was, I like my own space. Like on a game day, I always wanted to do my own thing, but no, I wouldn't say nervous. Obviously, that game probably was a little bit nervous. On the touchline, I didn't get until the second half, and I just remember I must have been nervous because I must have drank that much. I got stitched straight away, the worst stitch I've ever had, and I was just running around, but you're just trying to impress, and
yeah.
And I managed to stay in the team for the following week. Yeah, so. Pretty much was like made up, wigging away. Didn't get the win, but obviously the first team had just made the Challenge Cup final, so a few lads were getting wrapped up in cotton wool for the next 2 weeks. And probably that's why I got my opportunity.
Big game though, mate, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. We had a fairly young team out, but if you want to get chucked in at deep end, wigging away after you've just beat them in Challenge Cup semi-final was... didn't want to go into.
Yeah, and you touched on the team struggling at the time, mate. How's a camp when you're on the back of a struggling start like that? Is it a tricky place to be, or?
Yeah, I was in and out at that time, so I couldn't really comment on that period. But I think during the time at Salford, we definitely, you've lost a few on the bounce, just to keep seeing what the end goal is or what. Like what you're trying to achieve, it does get hard, like, because you know you're going in for a few, it's not going to be that positive.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of, and I guess at the moment the first team at Warrington are going through it, but you've got to find catalysts for change, and you have got to stick with what's going. But it's like anything, we were probably fortunate that year that Tony had come in, and we used the kind of the cup is a bit of a springboard. We still finished 10th that year in the league, I think. But then the cup was a bit of, like, just overrided everything. We not won out for 35 years and just kind of glossed over that and then prepared us for the year after.
Right. So what's it like? Is it because obviously you're a very chilled out bloke. You can see that just from our chat now. But when a new coach comes in, is it a bit etchy with people or?
Yeah, I think people are nervous, aren't they? They don't get judged again. They might have a real good relationship with the previous coach. I think I remember when Tony first came in, he'd drop Lee Braze to the bench.
Which is a big statement, isn't it?
Martin Gleeson got swapped for Richie Mathers. So he made a few statements, but kind of laid down, like, if you work hard, you'll get in the team. So it was when you look back at that squad, it was a pretty impressive team looking back. And at the time, you don't see it as a young player. You go, you just want to be in that team. You don't realise what you're competing with. And you get, I won't say I ever got ahead of myself, but looking back, go, geez, done well to even get one game in that team.
Yeah. But you're just riding the wave at the time, I suppose. You're taking what comes, aren't you? And
yeah, definitely. You just, you want more. As a kid, you always want more, don't you? You, whatever you've got is never enough. And and I think that's how I was, like, with that kind of start, playing for my hometown club. And it's pretty much, that was my only ever goal as a rugby player. Like, as a, Warrington never won trophies. The club I played at, amateur, we weren't ever good enough winning anything. We had I had limited like success in like little town events and stuff, but in terms of what people seem to say, oh, dreamed of playing in finals and stuff, that wasn't the dream. The dream was just to play for Warrington. And to get to do that, and then kind of, like, it's all your boyhood dreams come true. Like, that's all you've ever wanted. And your mates, you've seen mates who wanted the same thing that have missed out or fell short, and you think, well, how good is that that you've got to do it? It's a privilege.
Fair enough, mate. How was your on derby day? How was it, a week building up to a derby?
Yeah, I think it does mean more, I reckon, for the people who care, like, about the actual derby. I remember, for me, Widnes was the main derby. They actually turned us over more than probably we won. But as a kid growing up, I used to get the train, go and watch the first team. And so you kind of feel like, you know, that that's what the build-up is. And then at the same time, try and put the professional head on. I think going to university helped me with that. You know, like, made me a bit more level-headed and kind of go, it's just another game. Out there, do your work. But having that background and knowing my mates are watching and that sort of stuff.
Well, that's it. You've got the perspective of both sides of the line. I mean, yeah, you've got the fan perspective, because as a kid, we hated each other sort of thing, didn't we?
Yeah.
And then as you've grown up, you're on the professional side where you've got to put that aside. But no, it is. It's a nice little insight, really. So what's your view on these fake pitches, mate? Did you? What do you think of them?
Oh, what, that's that? Sorry.
All the fake pitches or
the one at Widnes, and pretty much grown to get used to them now. Obviously, I remember being part with the RFL medical advisory board, and the actual D like says that there's less injuries on him, even though what like that. So I was like, oh, well, that's not on the stats, but I'd rather play on grass. Like, you end up with, it's the grazes more than the, like,
oh, it is, yeah.
Once you get one, they're there for the year.
Yeah, you're sticking in bed and that.
Yeah.
Horrible. So, when coming around, well, before we do, you played in a Challenge Cup final, mate, for your hometown club, haven't you? So, how was that? What's the build up to them finals like for you, being a local lad as well?
Yeah, that first one, like I say, was whirlwind. So I've gone playing my debut. 2 weeks later, I'm playing in the Challenge Cup final. Like,
isn't it?
And I think, like, when I look back, there was other players around my age that were missed out, who I thought would have just, because they more experienced, would play. Some big names missed out. Paul Rauhihi, who was fit.
Yeah.
And then a few lads missed out through injury. So I was lucky that, unfortunately, for some other lads who deserved to be there, wasn't involved. And all I was worried about was getting down there with the squad. So I remember saying, like, oh, well, you know, I'm training full time now. Am I involved with this at the weekend? And I think that was like the Monday. Then Tony was like, yeah, come get yourself sorted, get yourself a suit. Just make sure you look all right for the weekend. And then I was like, down. So I'll have an hotel room. And he was like, yeah. So then, I was buzzing. I was travelling down. Wasn't even thinking about mum and dad going down. They were going down as fans, Speckies. And I think it was like the Thursday. Look out at Trafford Centre and got a phone call from Tony saying, oh, yeah, you'll be playing that weekend. And I was like,
no, he's just been practicing carrying the water all week, and then he says that.
Yeah, and then he's like, yes. So then I was like, all right. And then mum was like, I was with my mum and my girlfriend at the time, and they were like,
yeah.
What am I saying? So I told them, obviously, they were delighted. And then remember my dad, he said, he walked in, sat at the end of the table, he said, playing this weekend then? And I was like being all, like, taking the piss. I went, yeah, yeah, I'm actually. I went, oh, fuck off. And I went, no, yeah. I am. Fuck off.
Yeah, class, so, that, innit?
Yeah, and it was good. Yeah. And then obviously, like, the people on that who've been through my journey and stuck by my side and supported me, it's kind of was not a reward for them, but it was nice for them to be part of that too.
Yeah, it is for them and you, isn't it, mate? Obviously, yeah. it's justified all them little sacrifices that other kids don't make, and
yeah.
like you said, the up and down journey. You've had a big injury, and it justifies your decision. So, when a loan spell to Lee comes about, mate, how do you? I ask everyone this. So, is a loan to you a kick in the face, or is it an opportunity to play?
I'll admit, I struggled with it. Because it was a new concept too, it was dual reg, wasn't it? So,
yeah.
And I'd had that, not that I got ahead of myself, but I kind of thought, well, I've proved to them that I'm capable of playing first team. Realistically, when I look like, say, when you look back and go, was I fit enough, all that sort of stuff, to do that week in, week out? Probably not. But then the dual reg system, in my eyes, I didn't want to play for Lee. I wanted to play for Warrington. And that's who I contracted to, so I was like, this is a bit hard. But then, on the flip side, I was like, no, actually, it's a good club, playing at a better level than playing reserves, yeah. Which it was at the time. So then, but fundamentally, I wanted to play in Warrington's first team at that point. I think I was about 21. Yeah, it would have been 21, 22. So I wasn't like one of the 18-year-olds doing it. I felt like I was a bit more senior, whereas like, and then I wasn't playing great. And that started to, I was thinking, but I was getting picked every week at Lee, and I was like, there's lads there that probably deserve to play more than me, but I'm not playing well. And I kind of struggled that year going full time, and with that, because that was like my first full year full time too. Yeah. So I was getting used to being a little bit leaner, fitter, and then I think I was just getting banged around a bit in championship. And I started the year pretty well, and then when I wanted to get opportunities at first team with Warrington, I think that's when I struggled, and then kind of reset the year after, and then just kind of said, well, it is what it is, that's what I've got to do. So sent those dual reg again at Lee, and I played really well. Like, I kind of just wanted, made sure I was the best player on the pitch. And then I went on loan to Wakefield, which I wanted to that time. Like, I think, because it was like, well, if I'm not playing Super League here, I might as well go and try and play Super League elsewhere, and so I can show that I can play week in, week out.
The brave call for a young lad. So at Wakefield, you'd have been what, 23, 24?
Yeah, I think it was 23. Yeah, probably 23-ish, yeah.
It's a big call for a young lad, mate, and it's something you'd have had to have sit down with the club about, isn't it? And
yeah,
to speak it through. And
I remember speaking to Tony, like, I said, well, I've just played really well for them clubs. If there's nothing here, can I go? I'm pretty much on the field. He said, oh, well, I'll have a look, I'll ask around. And then it was just like a good experience. Obviously, Wakefield at the time had just gone bust pretty much, and they were just playing a load of kids that I think the only couple of senior players was Carquidas. We would have a bust up with him, like the reserves once. And then it was, I ended up travelling with him for two or three months. And then I ended up playing a few games for the first team that year, but not as much as I would like to have done, but kind of left me instead that I was on the right path. And then the year after was probably, whether you call it a breakout year, but that's where I played most every week pretty much. We had a bit of success that year, so then, yeah, it is a big call, but fundamentally, it's a short term, and if you feel like, not that I felt like I was going to rot away, but it was. I think they changed to under-20s too, so if I wasn't playing at Lee, I would be playing under-20s, and I was like, I'm 23, I don't want to be playing under-20s.
Yeah.
I think I played in an under-20s grand final, and like, I used to think, this is pretty embarrassing, but looking back, it's your ego that gets in the way.
Yeah. And what people might not realise, mate, is touching on the reserves, is that back when we were growing up, you know, you're a little bit older than me, reserves had players coming back from injury that were on the cusp of first team, oh, well, I'd step, maybe had been banned and someone had stepped in. So the likes of Clark, he just would have been playing. He'd have been mid-20s in his prime, wouldn't he?
Yeah, definitely. I can, that's it. So the reserves was a strong league. It was a tough competition because you had a reserves team too. It wasn't like the 18-year-olds are playing reserves. Like, that's kind of what we're doing at the minute because we've just not got enough players. But then there's 20, 21-year-olds who were fighting to get an opportunity, and then you get them first team drop downs, which sometimes I remember the Wigan team, they had Pat Richards, Amos Roberts, who was like Man of Steel at the beginning of that year.
Yeah.
Pat Richards ended up winning a Man of Steel. Bialecki, Carl Price, you think they were all playing reserves.
Full first team back line virtually,
And then on top of that, like, players that went on to do it would have been like Farrell, Tompkins, Lee Mossop. So the actual standard was really good. And when they got rid of the reserves, like, that was probably the beginning of the end of the reserves, to be honest, because they slowly went down to under-20s, under-19s, and got rid of it completely. So, no, I think it was a good grounding. And I always used to go with target them players too. You know, if you knew you were playing someone of ilka or a reputation, try and go after them.
Right. So, and again, you talk about the spell at Wakefield. Was a little bit of that proving that you're not just a game a month in Super League, that you were firmly ready to play week in, week out as well?
Yeah, and even going there was difficult because I didn't play every week, where I felt because they had contracted players too, so I think... Yeah. And you see the politics of stuff, and I've learned that as I've gone around. But then, for me, I just wanted to play, and I was like, I just can't understand it. And then played a few games. I think I ended up playing about 8 games there or something, but it was good just so that... Because when I was playing, I wouldn't be playing like 10 to 20 minutes. I'd be playing full games or 60 minutes. And it was just a good experience for me to kind of give me some confidence. Go, actually, I can do this.
Yeah. And what was the chat like when you went back for that pre-season before you played most of the games at Warrington? What was the talk around that then?
So still I was on the cusp. Nothing really changed in terms of like my squad positioning. It was that I kind of knew that I need to make a bit of a hit in there. Like you're saying, probably come up to 23, 24. Again, still, we just signed Chris Hill. So if I remember a game we were both playing at Huddersfield away, then he got picked in front of me. I'm like he's got picked, and I've been there. And then a week later, I got in, and then must have done enough, and then stayed in.
Right.
But the actual chat wasn't. I was always quite confident that I should be in there. With Tony, I won't say he was obnoxious about it. I was just saying, oh, I want to be in there. I was just safe every week. I was just doing my job and doing it well. And I remember, obviously we made another Challenge Cup final, and I was quietly confident that I'd keep my spot because of how consistent I'd been playing.
So there's nothing wrong with being confident, mate. If you walk back yourself, your belt is going to, aren't they?
Yeah.
And when people see you doing it. So do you know, like, these finals are coming about? Is it something, it's not a nice phrase, but is it something maybe you took for granted being young? Did you just expect it to happen because that's what you were doing at the time? Or
Probably not. Like, the first one, I was like, obviously, Will Wynn's the only way I can explain it. And then, like I said, I never had any, not ambition. I didn't have time to think, what are my next goals? Do I want to win a trophy? Yeah. Do I want to... So, like, personal goals at that time were probably just stay in the team and get as many games as possible. And growing up, lifting a Challenge Cup trophy, that just didn't happen at Warrington. So, and that was obviously the start of a bit of a relationship, as you say, with the cup. And that 2012 one, it was kind of, well, I've earned this one. I've played every round, I've played every game leading into it, so I'm going to make sure that I enjoy it. And fortunately, we won and managed to get over for a try. And like the moments, they're unbelievable. And I don't think my thing is that it's that good of a feeling that you want to do it again.
Yeah.
And I know that I've come across players like, well, I've won one. And I'm like the moments, the feeling you get, that's what you want to replicate.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that season, we played grand final and I got dropped for that one, which was hard. I really thought I deserved to be in there. But I kind of seen that one coming because, like I said, I was pretty steady all the way through. And then some lads had some good games towards the back end. And then players with, like, I think Ben Westwood was coming back in from injury. And then Ben Harrison was out. And then I was just like, oh, too many pieces for this puzzle at the minute. And that one, even not being like sometimes when you don't play, you kind of like, oh, are they going to win? But no, I don't think I've ever not been involved with playing a game and been so hurt by us not winning that grand final.
Because you're an hometown lad in a sense, but lad as well, you could have spiked your dummy out and stuff, couldn't you?
Yeah.
So how does the whole move to Swinton come about, and why was that?
So that just kind of changed relationship with club. So Lee must have decided they didn't want Joe Regis, or I think they might have partnered with Wigan more officially.
Yeah.
In Warrington, Swinton were training out of Warrington's base, and I think it was just kind of convenient. Again, probably struggled with that. I get like kind of gone, well, I've just played in cups. It was hard because Adrian Morley played a couple of games for him, and like, if you're captain of a club of that ilk, done putting his hand up to play, you can't really spit your dummy out. But in terms of like, say going from highs to lows, we played a few games for them. And we weren't very good, to be honest. We had a full, pretty much a Warrington team, like with academy and first team was playing at Swinton, and we couldn't win a game.
It was mad. Just how it is, isn't it?
No, but it's funny because then that's how I come across Watto, and obviously Watto ends up Salford. It was at that point I was kind of thinking, I have to prove myself again, and I feel like I've done it twice, and then starting to think about what is this the best place for me to develop. The club have actually, beginning of that year, kind of offered me a 3-year deal. I just didn't, I was like, oh well, I'd rather play and see whether I can get a better deal. Like, I'd want to stay, but I had a dreadful low move to Castleford with the current Darryl Powell just come in, and then that kind of got quashed, so I had to come back to Warrington.
Right.
Midway through the loan period and just train because you were on loan and you weren't allowed to. It was a minimum of a month.
Right.
And then I just kind of said, oh, I'll just attack them at the end of the year. The club said, oh, am I going to re-sign? And I just kind of said, no, well, I just feel like I've got to move on and for my development.
So you could, again, another big call, you're still 20s, aren't you? And a lot of people could have just sat there
and
took it and waited, but instead you went Northern Pride, mate, not round the corner, was it?
No.
So how does that come about, and who's representing you for you to get that type of move?
Myself, pretty much. It was hard. Because obviously my now wife, she was with me at the time, and we were pretty settled. We were ready to buy a house in Warrington. She just got a good job with the council, and then it just kind of just didn't sit right with me signing there for what I just didn't feel valued really at that moment in time for what I thought I was bringing to the club. I spoke to the Hulker, I think Sandercott was the coach, and then I was like, if I leave Warrington and go to Hulker and then I end up in the same position, I'm a better at staying at Warrington being in that position. And then I don't know whether I'd see Jason Dimitri on, I don't know how we'd cross paths. I think we'd played a Challenge Cup game at Keighley versus Warrington, and we must have just said hello, and then from there, I think over Twitter, we kind of just got saying, oh, would you come out here? And I was like, I fancy it. Signed for them. And then I went over like went to Sydney for New Year and then went up after Christmas and was like, definitely didn't think you'd come. He said, yeah, he said, I thought you'd just flag us and stay over there. And he was really good. He filled me with confidence, just kind of said, wouldn't have expected Warren to let you go. And just got me playing good rugby, enjoying rugby again, like, and just kind of took it back to why you play. And it was like, they had a real good set of lads that like opened their arms to me. And because they were based in Cairns, far north Queensland, but they're quite a local team. So the Brisbane clubs kind of sign the best kids from wherever they can get hold of them, and whereas they kind of keep it all local. And
right.
It just kind of made me feel part of the family straight away. And and my wife went with us at the time, and it was just such a good experience. Got to tick off so many of the boxes that I wanted to do away from rugby too. So then it just kind of fitted well. But JD and his wife and kids were brilliant with us. And it was, like I say, he got us just enjoying the rugby.
Yeah, which is fundamentally why we all started, mate, isn't it? And
yeah, definitely.
Did you go back to student mode a couple of times and enjoy a few nights out or what?
Well, yeah, Travel Central there, isn't it? So it's Saturday night, Gilligan's, massive night. We played on a Saturday at 5:30, so it's perfect timing.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of young lad, we had a play at Leary, he ended up going and playing for Manly, North Queensland, and he was a single lad, so we'd go out and he wouldn't do too bad with the girls and and then next day me and Mrs. would nurse our, we'll call them hangovers, but we'd just go down to the Esplanade just listening to everyone's stories from the night before. It was a good year, like really enjoyable. Got to see parts of the world that never knew existed, never mind, like up in that Cape. I had a real good job. So I was part-time, but part of the job. So they said, if you come over, we'll get you a job through the club. What's your role? I said, I've done teaching as at university. And then so they pretty much made their own program where they delivered rugby league as a subject in school. And there was 13 schools signed up, and then it was our job to kind of go into the schools, make sure they were in the program properly, work with the kids that were on the program. So if they were misbehaving in different lessons, I'd sit in their lesson going, why are you misbehaving in this? But got to go to the tip on all the islands, the Torres Strait Islands. They had an academy up there, satellite academy. Gone to middle of the sticks, in the middle of Australia, Mount Isa, just red sandy town. It was just a dead good experience.
So how do you go about finding a gaff to live in and stuff? Is that done for you for when you get there or?
No, we got we kind of looked online, and you don't know what you're getting, do you, when you're looking online? So, and Australian websites, and Australia's a bit 10 years behind, especially in the country. Cairns isn't really the country, but it could be. So we'd seen this one place and was like, oh, that sounds good. 8 pools, all this sort of stuff. And then we got sent, flew in, and put us in this hotel, and this club hotel. It's funny because the students use it when they go to the student rugby league, Great Britain and that. I was like, oh.
Go straight back.
I've heard about this place. And then anyway, we found this place. It was called Cairns One. And like I say, it was ace, this apartment. It had 8 pools, its own gym, tennis courts, and then just live this life of luxury, pretty much.
It is some experience, that, isn't it? So how did that year go, mate, on the field? How was it?
Yeah, unbelievable. I think we lost 2 games all year. So the year prior, I think they come top, but then bang, bang, straight out of the playoffs.
Right.
And so they probably learnt a lot as a team, and then we won everything, and so we won minor premiership, which was the league leaders or whatever
they called
them in it, and then won the Q Cup, and then that year was the first ever NRL state championship. So they played the Q Cup winners versus New South Wales New South Wales Cup winners on grand final day.
Yeah.
And we got, so we played Penrith, and they'd had 500 odd game NRL games of experience in the team. Like, I think we were 5-1 to win, and yeah, we managed to pull get one over on them. I think we ended up like 28-16 down at one point, and then pulled it back. Yeah, it was good. Got to fly back with the trophy and that. Like, yeah, it was just a real good experience.
Yeah, I can imagine. So that year, mate, was that when you were named in? You were named in like a countryside, like.
Oh, that was the year 2016. That was when I was at St. George playing reserve grade for them.
How do you take stuff like that? Are you, because you're a pretty modest lad and that you. I don't think
anyone likes to be acknowledged, don't they, if they think that they're doing a good job. But yeah, I think ultimately we play a team game, so winning trophies is more enjoyable than getting named in a team of the year.
And tell me later how good it is. So before you come on, because you come on with OKR, don't you? And you start, your leadership comes to the forefront, but is it something you've slowly built up, the leadership thing? Are you comfy in that sort of group? Or
I think like my journey's helped me develop some of them skills, is that put myself out of comfort zones, and then going to university, speaking, obviously you have to do that, presentations and stuff. And I'm thinking back, I remember one of the things that Tony Smith said in Preston was, is that in the first session that I went out with the first team, whilst he was there, I spoke up in video about how we should play. And I didn't think anything of it at the time. I was probably said something stupid, but...
you said what you're thinking, haven't you?
And I think, obviously, having that grounding with Tony as a coach, it probably taught me loads of things that probably... I had no idea that that's how the game could be played or should be played, and then had that grounding to go to Australia and have confidence going, no, this is what I think. And I remember going to OKR with a mindset of that I wasn't going there to make friends, I was going there to prove myself as a Super League player. And that's definitely the mindset I had. And pre-season, there was a few of us. OKR brought in 17, I think, new signings that year. Chris Chester just took over. And as I said, I was already speaking to him the year before. So it was kind of, it just felt right going to OKR. And leadership stuff, I wanted a leadership role. I wanted to kind of go, I'm ready for that. And then in pre-season, feel like I did that. And then we brought Terry Campisi in late on, and he was given the captaincy, and I was thinking I was made vice captain. So I was kind of thinking, well, I must have been doing something right. Got given the 13 jersey. A real good, real enjoyable year. The group that we had, there was a few crazy ones in there, but generally they were just a good group of lads, like, who got on with each other. Played some real good attacking. We just weren't the best defensively, but we had a decent-ish year, really, from what comparative to what they had previously.
And getting the 13 tie, is that reassuring? Does it make you feel a bit justified?
Yeah, well, I think if anyone asks for, like, you know that it's a starting number, so you give an indication that you're doing something right on it. And It's not the be all and end all. But I think when you're working hard through pre-season and you know there's other players that want that same jersey and you're getting ahead of him, then it gives you that confidence that you're doing stuff right.
And you end up back in a Challenge Cup final, mate, but this time leading a team out. So how did it feel, any different? Or
it was obviously like that them moments. For me, I just kind of think, I hope mum and dad are proud, kind of thing. In terms of, probably just thinking about the game. In generally, obviously, you've been out, you've seen the crowd already. You know it's a massive occasion. And we weren't very experienced in terms of how many players and even the club and the film. I was worried before the game about how we were going to perform. But kind of,
the occasion, probably, isn't it, mate? Did you get lent on for that?
Pardon?
Did you get lent on for that?
Yeah, probably not as much as I thought I would have. Yeah, we did some stuff where, like, even where the hotel was, we pitched outside the hotel, straight outside the stadium, and it was like they had fans at having like dinner with us the night before. You know, like within, and it was just a bit
not ideal.
The club was just a bit inexperienced with. Yeah. Whereas when Warrington and I did it, when Warrington did it, they didn't leave no stone unturned. Like we all had into like this. I think where the England football go, the Grove, and like everyone had their own room, and it was maybe a bit the other way, but at least they couldn't have been said, well, there was no. And little things, I think, when you speak to people from the other side, like Leeds, and they said, oh, how you did that, because the club did a song, and you're like, for it, and I kind of get why and the reasoning, but at the time, it didn't sit well with me. When we were all in this recording studio, I'm sat at the back going, I bet Leeds aren't doing this. But Leeds, like, obviously, it's one of those days that you love to forget. But probably for me, if you'd have said to 11-year-old me, you're going to get Leeds aside at Wembley in a Challenge Cup final, you just go, you're joking. But
yeah. No,
unbelievable, really.
And then could you imagine going back up down under, mate? And how did that come about? Is that yourself again, that?
No, but at that point, I'd got an agent whilst I was in Australia, kind of saw someone, well, Adrian Molly, got touch base with him, just said, oh, I'm kind of travelling well, do you recommend anyone? And so I was speaking to St. George when I was in Australia, but they were kind of saying, oh, anything we're going to be able to offer you, you'll be like last in line, like we need to get some of the, like our first order sorted. And I was like, okay. And then Hull KR coming in with their offer, and I was like, well, I want to go back full time. I don't want to leave it. And then St. George might have offered me like a training trial kind of contract, like which is that you go do pre-season there and you might get a contract after it. So I didn't want to leave it to that offer. So I went to Hull KR, but I got written in my contract that if an NRL club come in, I'd be able to leave. And to be fair, that was probably just not on a whim, but kind of thought probably won't happen.
Right.
And then I remember one, I think it was like the morning before the contract that clause was going to expire, they St. George had rang up, or my agent had rang up saying, oh, they're interested. Right. Do you want to go? This is the offer, but they can't move on it. And I was like, I don't know. Like, so I went and spoke to Chris Chester, said, oh, I've just been offered to go to St. George. And he was like, where are you going to go? And then I was quite happy to, I was comfortable at Hull KR. I would have liked to stay there because I was comfortable. I said, I'd just literally bought an apartment in Leeds. So and they were saying, oh, well, why don't we get you lined up long term? And I was like, yeah. And then I remember a conversation with my wife. She's like, are you going to get this opportunity again, though? Do you not want to go and just test yourself? And
yeah.
Not test yourself, but just go and have a crack at it. And then you know that you've had a crack. And I was like, yeah, you're right. You know what? Let's go and do it. And then, so that's how that came around. So I was told, well, I signed because I was waiting on Hull KR to get back to me before I'd signed with St. George, and then they didn't come back to me with an offer, so I signed with St. George. And then
right.
I remember Chessie saying, oh, well, next year when we're doing this, I was like, well, I'm not here next year, mate. it was a funny old experience, but yeah, then I had to shoot out to Australia for their pre-season, like November time.
And what's the difference between ours and theirs, mate? Because I think now their media sides have cracked it with that sort of stuff, haven't they? They make it up their stuff and the shirt presentations, they're all great. They happen at this club, but we're just not out there with it, isn't it?
I think that's it. I think for me, Warrington, when I was there, we did stuff really well, you know, like in terms of that. And like I say, they've probably had the media in terms of the TV sort of stuff nailed for a few years. If you're talking about that aspect of it, it's bigger than, in comparative, it's like Premier League in Sydney, that is Premier League, football. It's just all over the show. I'd imagine if you're one of the big names, it's suffocating. That's how full on it is. But as a club, like St. George, it's a big club too. They might mind where they're trained, but there's the stuff that allows them to kind of be like, well, when people say how intense it is and stuff, but they get to train at that intensity because of the scheduling of the year, the calendar, they only play so many games, and it has an effect on the performances on the pitch. You get 4 months of pre-season to get massive, get faster, fitter, stronger, whereas our international lads are probably getting a month.
If that.
So that's probably where that, then you are getting bigger, it's because the bigger collisions are going in, because they're running faster.
Yeah, so they're well for basically a bit tidier than ours, basically.
Yeah.
You get up time in that.
Yeah, definitely. I think the broadcast deal might have opened the eyes to that with the clubs recent over the last 2 years, with them splitting from the RFL and then coming with this realignment. I know that's one thing when I've come back to Warrington with Carl, speaking to him where he sees the game, how he wants the club to be at the forefront of that. I think that's something that was attractive about coming back in terms of take away the emotional side of developing the young Warrington lads and trying to get them through the system. But to have a club that's kind of that forward thinking and wanting to be on par, if not better than those sports and brands, and that's what's important. That's where the game's got to go if it wants to survive and thrive.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of competition over there, mate, isn't there? Mm-hmm. So you then come back and you signed for Salford, mate. Could you ever have imagined from when you come to where you got to would have happened in that space of time?
It's funny because, there's a few clubs I was speaking to, and Salford wasn't the best offer, but I had a bit of a relationship with Wattle, and when I spoke to him, he's the one who kind of, that's where I want to go. But Salford were doing really well. They were top four. They just made the semi-final of the Challenge Cup. So I was like, well, that's a club on the up, and I feel like I can add to it. Turned out we got beat. My debut was the Challenge semi-final. We got beat by Wigan. And then I don't think we won a game in that Super 8. So then I've gone, having these hopes of playing in two major finals. Yeah. And then after the end of that, Marwan pulled out of the club. So it's gone from being right up here, right down, and then, the gradual build of the next two years, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's nice to put your name to it and just say, yeah, you were part of that kind of relative success. I don't call it success because we didn't win out, but
yeah, no, I get that.
What we did there, it was good to be part of. And 2018 was challenging in terms of one, I'd come out of a World Cup, didn't have a long pre-season, didn't feel ready for the start of the year, got a bit of a neck injury, tried playing with that, and then wasn't playing bad, but wasn't playing great. Yeah. And then kind of beginning of that 2019 year, was only a bit of an outer of the starting team, and then I was like, well, I'll use this to kind of just build myself up, get fit and strong, and then push my way back into that starting 13 slot, and we went on a decent ride on the back end of that year.
Yeah. So do you mind if I go back a little bit, mate? Because obviously, you've played at a World Cup with Ireland, you've been vice-captain, and what does international rugby mean to you, mate? And how have you enjoyed them journeys with the national side?
Oh, I've loved it. I think looking back, representing Ireland's like a constant thing in my career. It's something that I'm really proud of. I mean, my family are really proud of it and what it means to them. And what it means to me is just, it's everything that you could hope for, is playing for your country, and you're not just representing your family, representing the whole nation. And I think that kind of gets lost sometimes, that how powerful that could be. But getting to play in them, the moments that like my debut, where like my dad, my brother, and my granddad are all stood opposite me where I'm singing national anthem. When you look back, only playing against Serbia, but moment is something that sticks with me. And then the other one is like say playing them big tournaments in the World Cups. And unfortunately, we've never really kicked on and like probably. I think the 2017 one was, we had a good showing, just a bit unfortunate in that Papua New Guinea game. But as they've kind of shown out, they're not a beat Great Britain the year after. So the game we give them was probably a better game than what the Great Britain side gave them on reflection. So,
yeah.
But then moments, the Fiji game in Rochdale and playing at a sold out stadium against England at Huddersfield, it's just would have liked to have some more wins alongside it.
No, but you've touched on it a few times, but being a kid playing for Wolston, mate, it's probably so far fetched for you. But these boxes you keep ticking, and obviously they know what about you, mate, because you're incredibly modest. But so, like you said, at Salford, you had a bit of off the field was up and down, wasn't it? How was it when Marwan walked away, because I've had Rangi on and Rangi ruled to get paid at times. He wasn't happy off the pitch and he sort of got brushed under the carpet with Rangi. And I understand everyone's different, but how did you find it during that time?
No, like I can't really grumble too much, Marwan, in terms of when he left, he pretty much said that he'd honour everyone's contracts if that was the way, but he wasn't good and willing to put any more money in like every month like he was doing. So for the club, it was probably what they needed is like in terms of making them sure they're sustainable, but obviously they probably were spending, well, they were going over the cap and then going next minute they're playing way below the cap within. We had to sell some players, Gaz O'Brien, Murdoch, Benny Murdoch, Masilla. So like, Our team took a big hit in terms of we'd gone from having probably four half backs to choose from of high quality to we only had one in the end. It was Rob Lewin and Jack Little John come over and he struggled to kind of playing over here, got injured. What I'd say is that the core of that team went through that. Stayed and was part of that success the year after. And it probably did help with that, kind of going out. Like we've been through some tough times. I remember getting beat at London away in the Super 8s and like I think all the four teams weren't there, somewhere that finished on 10 points and like if points difference matters and we played in £1 million game and when you've got 2 or 3 year contract on the line, it's you're starting going, well, it's kind of, it does it. It starts to, you think about it when every moment leading into a game, during the game, you're just wanting to win, but you're desperate to win.
Does it change the way you've played, Ty, in that game?
I wouldn't say it did, but then it might do to for others. Like,
but, you can always beat yourself, guy.
Yeah, but like I say, we weren't like cohesive on the pitch. You know, like we just lacked a bit of fluid on the pitch. Like we were just a bit scatty and knotty at times. It was just didn't flow ever. And then, but we worked hard and we just lacked a bit of quality, really. And then,
sorry, mate, but just to interrupt you a second. So do you know? Because only fans only ever see the Saturday or Sunday, don't they?
Yeah.
Don't see the Monday to Friday. So what sort of things is your leadership group doing to step up to losing them sorts of players in tough times on the Monday to Friday? Because not only have you got to generate it for yourself, others are probably looking at you, looking to you to make something happen for them, aren't they? And
You just got to drive standards and just make sure that you're consistent with... I think that's what we were really good at with what we had a good core group of senior players that bought into what he wanted to deliver. So even though them feelings were there, I think we were always confident that we'd get through it, and then hope that, I think our worry was is that the next year would we be in the same position again where we can't recruit, and is this like a never-ending cycle? And to be fair, I can't remember who we recruited to begin with, but it, well, Jackson and Joey come in, didn't they?
Yeah.
And like that kind of did give us a bit of direction that we probably just lacked in terms of in them two key positions.
Yeah, that's fair enough, mate. And you signed for Lee again, but because of COVID, mate, it's something that didn't really take off, wasn't it? So what were your intentions? Was you happy to see out your career with Lee?
Yeah.
Was that going to be the case?
Yeah, I think it was like, it was funny. I had a bit of a, with Salford, I would have been happy to stay there, but with the issue with Wattle leaving and stuff, timing, and I was happy, so I wasn't kind of active in the market of sorting myself out. I just thought I'd stay, and to be fair, me and the club didn't see eye to eye at the end of it, and I was kind of content that, well, if that was the end, then so be it.
Okay.
Good. And then Lee, and then the World Cup was still happening, so I kind of thought, well, I knew I want to play in that. That would be a nice way to finish. And then, but yeah, Lee come in and kind of thought, well, that's kind of full circle. Speaking to Warrington too at the time, but salary cap issues there. And then Lee put together an offer that thought that suited me. And then a little bit of a new challenge again, like kind of, well, if we can stay up, that's a win. Like if I'm part of something like that. The year at Lee was challenging in terms of players that we were with, that whether they didn't believe that they could stay up or what, I just don't think everyone bought into what we was trying to achieve,
right?
Which was, I found frustrating myself, and then it obviously took a bit of a nasty blow during that Warrington game where we ended up calling time on my career because of that, really, and probably would have gone feel physically good, but still suffering from a bit of double vision from that. And when I've come round in hospital after getting knocked out and see my wife's face, thinking, oh, that was probably the time to kind of think, oh, this is probably it. Yeah. So, but and having a young family now, it kind of changes it. And yeah, there was a lot of information come at once where going, oh, actually, it's probably the right time.
Yeah, that's fair enough, mate. That's fair enough. And the one thing before we go on to what life's like for you now, mate, appreciate him taking a lot of your time up, is every time you've moved, there's been no animosity whatsoever, has there? You've always gone with the blessing, or it's just been mutual.
Yeah.
Did that tarnish it a little bit with Salford after the journey you've been a part of, or?
Yeah, I won't call it animosity either, but I think we just didn't see at the end of it and way they dealt with stuff. But since I have spoke to the people that I felt like I needed to at the club, and I feel like there's a decent relationship still there. And but I think like everything goes full circle, doesn't it? And what goes around comes around. So if you're a bit of an idiot to someone at some point, you might need, like, not that's why you do it, but you don't know when you come across that person again, and I feel like have I always felt agreed with why I've changed clubs or why not? Then probably not. But then kind of think you're master of your own destiny. It's what you make of it. You kind of can blame people, or you can just go and crack on and go, it's, well,
make the best of it.
And I suppose the best point with that is that when I was over in Australia, did I think I should have played more games in first team? You know, yeah, but fundamentally, so I didn't do enough to impress the right people to get me there. So it's, you've got to take ownership, ain't you? And if you've upset someone on the way or whatever, then that's the way it is. It's, you've got to take you for who you are.
Not a lot of people get the opportunity to go out there, though, mate. You've done it twice.
Yeah.
So it's silver linings, isn't it? The rough and the smooth, mate. So how's life been for you after rugby, and what about this coaching consultancy? And you've helped, like you touched on before, about you've been on the board and that with the RFL, haven't you, with injuries and stuff? And you're trying to make it better for the future, aren't you? How's all that been for you? And
So I guess that sort of stuff I've always tried to do throughout my career with, you know, being part of the RLP, like the Rugby Players Associations and stuff, and push myself to kind of go into them kind of meetings and act on behalf of my peers. And but yeah, since finishing, my big main focus has been like my injury, which was obviously nice when I did announce my retirement, that there was a few opportunities got presented to me straight away, which I didn't see coming. So like obviously the role that I'm in now with Warrington, that wasn't planned. A couple of the clubs got in touch about opportunities there, and I was like, well, as you mentioned that, so I mustn't be that, like, even though I'd left it on different terms at different clubs, that they were still happy to have me back in some sort of a role. And so that was a confidence boost straight away. But for me, it was kind of making sure I got to the bottom of my injury, which is still kind of ongoing. But I feel good. I feel really happy with the job I've got now. And some of the stuff we're putting in place with the academy at Warrington is hopefully going to help the club culturally from the bottom up. Obviously, Daryl's trying to do it from the top down too. So meet halfway and we'll align. The club will be in a real strong place, and the people I'm working with got a good relationship with. They've had a positive effect on my career, so there's like real good. You actually enjoy going into work every day, and that's been a journey already within itself. I got, because the people who employed me, who brought me in, have left. So right. Paul Anderson and Pete Ryden, and I've gone on to different roles. Paul with the RFL and Pete with Hull FC, but obviously grateful for them to kind of give me my first opportunity, and really got on with them. But then obviously I thought I'd done something wrong when they both handed the notice in. But then obviously two people have come in, two people I really respect too.
So just about the injury, mate, is it something that has scared you, or was it more you were more bothered about the people around you?
Bit of both, I think. Originally, because I wanted to get back playing before the end of the year, so I started training whilst I was at Lee, and then about after a month, just my vision wasn't right, and so I went for a few more scans and stuff, and then they found, oh well, you must have had a fractured eye socket. There's a bit of showing there about that, so when you're kind of a bit relieved, because obviously the brain injury stuff, and then obviously seeing the brain specialist and all them kind of things. And then you start reading about the recent stuff about the footballers and early onset, which obviously you're not going to be able to do anything about. But I spoke to Stevie Ward about how his was a repeat, like two big blows. And I was like, do I really want to be in that? I fit, obviously, it's not great having double vision all the time, but it's better than I can get through life. But then my headaches started coming a bit severe, and you know, in the mornings, and as soon as I stopped training, they've not stopped, but they've kind of eased. So, but then at the same time, I feel like it would be unfair, especially my partner, to kind of say, oh, well, I'm doing this because fundamentally it'd be for no one other than myself, my ego, because I want to keep playing. Well, like I said, I've not missed it as such, really. I think the role I'm in has helped massively, probably with them kind of feelings. And then I'm fortunate that I've got a career that I look back on that I'm proud of, what I've got.
Yeah, you should be as well, mate. So just a few daft questions now. Yeah. So any pre-match superstitions?
No, the only one is probably my breakfast was always poached egg on toast, but you go through phases of doing things, but no, none like. And I go, oh, stop being stupid.
So, your toughest player you've played with or against?
I'd have to say Adrian Morley. Just growing up watching him, and then that's who you idolise. And then obviously just seeing what he does to the opposition. Yeah. And literally before he's done it and then when he's actually done something to him.
So your favourite away ground, mate?
Depends which club I'm at. No, I think I've grown to like going to Hull KR. I really like going back there. Everyone ever has good words. Oh, go KR away, tough trip that. But then once I played there and then gone back there as a Salford player, I always enjoyed that one.
Right,
just. I think once you know the club and you know how good the fans are, and then it's a great atmosphere too, an old ground but with good facilities at the same time.
Yeah, good stuff, mate. So say you've been out on the pop and you're with the lads, mate.
Yeah,
mic ball ends up in your hand. What are you giving the crowd?
Oh, you know what? I'm rubbish at singing. So for my Ireland debut, I sang the Jungle Book. I want to be like you, so yeah. I know I could nail that one, so I don't have to do that.
Right, so come to the end of the chat, mate, and I'm after you 1 to 13.
Yeah. So
you can start at full back or prop, it's up to you.
Yeah, 30, I'll start at full back. I think play with some good full back. I'd go with Niall Evans, just for, I think, even though like, if you're going on player to player, like Brett Hodgson probably gets on calibre-wise, but what he did for us at Salford for that year was so vital, and he's such an elusive player.
Yeah.
And bags of talent. And just someone who I really enjoy playing with. Wingers. Could put Matt King there. He was really good in terms of obviously his ability and as a player, but just in terms of a bloke too, he's someone that as a younger player you'd be happy to have a conversation with and get confidence from.
Yeah.
Another winger, go Ken Seo. I think if I had to pick when I was at Salford, I was so happy when we signed him because I'd played with him at KR. Just knew what we're going to get, and when you blow in, you see him carrying the ball back, you're happy.
I can imagine, yeah.
And then centres, picking in there, so centres. I'm going for full Salford teammate. I got Chris Wellham. Really good, but then got some good ones at Warrington. Chris Briggs, phenomenal.
And then
I'm trying to think of the same one as at St George. But I think Bridgie, and then good Chris Wellham. I think just consistency and someone who you work hard at every week. Just really good work effort. Six would have to be Lee Braze. Seven, I'll go Benji Marshall. Again, just them two just created two creative players that obviously once in a generation kind of talents, really. Eight, Moz. Nine. Yeah, Michael Monaghan. He was good. Real good. Mickey Iron won't be happy with that one. No, but like I said, we had two quality nines there, like two starting quality nines.
We had some top players, mate, and yeah, I think you don't get to look back until times like this, I suppose, do you?
It's like this would ask me next week, I'd change again. Like Gaz Carvel, like live a prop, like got a real close relationship with Gaz, and but just think of like what he could do as a big fella. The minutes he played, it's good skill, but obviously fundamentally could carry the ball. Back rowers, Ben Westwood. And then Louis Anderson, fair player. 13. Who would have picked at 13? I played for you.
Beat yourself and captain and kicker, mate.
No, I think he played. Like Mark Flanagan at Salford, if because it pretty much were very similar players too, but he grafted.
Just a quick reminder that Boydell Sports are our sponsors here at Trot the Egg In. So if you go down to their flagship store in West Bank and quote Trot the Egg In, you'll get a free stud and a 1% discount. You've been listening to Trot the Egg In. Thanks to our sponsors, Boydell Sports. Follow us on Twitter @TrotTheEggIn and Instagram @Trot_the_egg_in.